To order, and I believe we're short one commissioner for quorum, so we'll do the any action items when we get one more member. I'd like to ask everyone to please join me in the pledge of the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, I've got the honor of doing the compensation announcement this morning, and so everyone here understands today the importance of the decisions that we make. I just want to go back in time, in history. In 1901, there was the Automobile Clubs of America, and these were individual clubs all over the country. You know, each city had their own club, and they came together, and they decided to put highway signs throughout the highway system in the United States, and it was the beginning of the uniform signs throughout this country on our highway systems. And so after they went through that, they organized and became the national AAA in 1916. They finally went to the federal government, and they fought for better roads, and they got the principle of the federal aid to highways was initiated. And so that's when the federal government first started. And so the reason that this battle was significant in 1916 is that there was 23,000 automobiles in the United States and over 17 million horses on the roads at that time. And so there was a lot of congestion at that time, and you can imagine how messy that congestion was. There was a lot of residue left over. And so, you know, with that in mind, so each one of you today is going to receive $100 per meeting attended, up to a maximum of $500 per month per agency. And so I want you to feel good about the work that we're doing. And this group, when they did come together, they did receive a stipend when they had that national conference. And so great things were coming out of that. And so we will continue to make our transportation system better by the decisions that we make here at MTC. So with that said, we'll now move on. Do we have a quorum? Adrian, will you serve on our committee today? Okay. And I'm assuming our legal counsel, we can do that. Okay. So the first we have is the consent calendar. These are just the minutes, and I'd entertain a motion.
So moved.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. If there's no further discussion, that motion will pass unanimously. Moving on to item number five, this is the Vital Signs Performance Monitoring Initiative. And Dave, are you going to present this?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. Dave Vaughton with MTC's Planning Section. I'm here to present on the Vital Signs Performance Monitoring Initiative, which is a new initiative here at MTC to track how we're doing in the realms of transportation, land use, economy, and the environment. And it's a key implementation activity of Plan Bay Area.
Over here. Scott.
Okay. I'll get started here as we get the slides loaded up. So my presentation today will include three components. First of all, I'll provide an overview of the project scope. Second, I'll discuss some of the key findings from Phase 1A, which deals with transportation issues. And then third, I'll demo our new interactive website for performance monitoring, which will launch in just over 2 weeks on the day of the commission meeting. So first of all, our process for vital signs really was a four-step process. We started off with scoping of specific performance monitoring measures and identified nearly 40 issue areas of regional significance that we wanted to track. We built upon the performance targets identified in Plan Bay Area. Second, we've collected a vast array of data, some of which is already publicly available, but very difficult for the public to access. We decided we wanted to put this out not as a paper report, but as an interactive website. Now, why did we do this? Primarily, so that way we can allow a level of customization. We can allow you to zoom into any of the 9 Bay Area counties, 101 cities, or even your local neighborhood to see what's going on various issue areas. And it makes it easy for us to update this data going forward on an annual basis. It also provides a home for open data, in other words, the sharing of data with the general public so they can understand what's happening in their own region. And so we've built a home for performance monitoring on the web for San Francisco Bay Area residents. In addition to doing a traditional historical trend analysis for each issue area, we also supplemented that with several other analyses. We added a regional context analysis, which examines differences between Bay Area cities and counties, as well as neighborhoods. We also added a metro comparison to understand how well the Bay Area is competing on a set of performance monitoring issue areas. These metro areas that we compared against were the other top 10 most populated metro areas in the United States. And they include traditional transit-oriented metros like New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, but also many Sunbelt cities that are more auto-oriented like Houston, Dallas, and Miami. Now, to give you a sense of the complexity of the data, you're probably all aware of commute mode share, the percentage of people who use different forms of transportation to get to work. But each of these blue boxes represents different data sets that were collected. So we looked at commute mode share in many ways, by where you live, where you work. We looked at the history. We looked at differences between cities and counties and metro areas across the country. And all of this data we've collected, cleaned, and we're making it available to the public in hopefully an easy-to-use format. Give you a sense of the project schedule. We kicked off the project in the spring. We've met with a number of different MTC working groups to understand what sort of issues we should be studying in the project. We have been conducting analysis for transportation and land use, as well as the economic analysis over the past 6 months, and building out an interactive website. And the goal here is to launch the first phase of that website in just a few weeks, and then roll out on a rolling basis every few months through June of 2015, the rest of the phases for vital signs. Just to give you a sense of all of the different working groups we met with, you can see that we've worked extensively with transit agencies, CMAs, our regional advisory working group, as well as the Policy Advisory Council. And today we're here with you at the Planning Committee to share the results from this first phase. The project studies approximately 40 different issue areas, and 14 of them will launch in Phase 1A. To quickly go through these icons or measures, they include commute mode share, commute times, commute flows, and interregional traffic levels, congestion both in hours and mileage, travel time reliability and VMT, transit ridership and cost effectiveness, and state of good repair for roads, highways, bridges, and public transit. In the future phases, which include land use, economy, and environment, we will look at issues such as population, jobs, construction, and greenfield development. And here you see the remaining phases. The economic measures include jobs and unemployment, incomes, workforce participation, affordability, poverty, regional economic output, and freight movement. And our environmental measures will look at air quality, gasoline sales, roadway safety, sea level rise impacts, as well as bay fill. Before I get into the six key findings of our first phase, I just want to provide a little bit of background on some of the overarching trends in the region. Our region is generally a slow growth region. We've grown since 1990 from 6 million to just over 7 million residents. And we have also seen relatively slow growth in terms of jobs, although we have somewhat of a boom-bust cycle that occurs, as you can see in this graph, in the 2000 economic boom, as well as what we see today. This chart shows the unemployment rate for the region. As you can see, a series of recessions led to spikes in the unemployment rate, including the Great Recession just a few years ago, which led to some of the highest unemployment on record. Gas prices also play a key role in some of the transportation trends we see, and this graph shows both the non-inflation-adjusted and inflation-adjusted gasoline prices specific to the Bay Area. And effectively what it shows, notwithstanding the recent drop in the last few months in gasoline prices, that gas prices today are roughly twice as high as they were in the 1990s. I'm now going to walk through the six key findings of the Vital Signs Phase 1A. So first of all, we found that regional commute mode shares and commute times remained remarkably stable over the past few decades. This area chart shows the shares of the various modes of transportation, the way that people get to work. And that red block there represents the share of folks who are using an automobile to commute. As of 2013, 77% of Bay Area residents drove to work. Over this time period, since 1960, the share of folks using public transit has also been relatively stable. It's been between 10 and 11% since 1970. The biggest change we've seen is a decline in carpooling and a growth in telecommuting. And that's illustrated by this next slide. So there were increasing mode shares for automobiles in the mid-20th century. Since then, we've seen some declines, primarily from the reduction in carpooling, and we've seen growth in the folks working at home, as well as small mode share increases for public transit and for walking. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the project does delve into some of the county-level differences. This slide indicates the share of folks taking public transit over the last five decades. As you can see, although public transit mode share has increased somewhat from the year 2000 in San Francisco, it is well below the peaks of 1960 and 1980. Some of the other counties in the Bay Area, such as Alameda and Contra Costa counties, have seen slight upticks in transit mode share in recent years. On commute times, we see the same sort of trend as we saw with mode share. The commute times in the Bay Area have ranged between approximately 24 and 29 minutes over the last several decades. Of course, transit commute times are significantly longer than automobile commute times, often because of the wait time for the bus or train. Our second finding is related to commute flows. So although most folks live and work in the same county, there are several counties that import significant numbers of workers each day. Surprisingly, in counties like Santa Clara and Sonoma, almost 85 to 90% of residents work in their own county. So those folks are not having to traverse county lines to get to work. Other counties like San Mateo, Contra Costa, and Solano export larger numbers of workers to other counties in the region. And this chart shows where those workers are going. So San Francisco imports approximately 150,000 workers each day. And Santa Clara County imports approximately 100,000 workers. Contra Costa and Solano counties are the largest exporters of workers. We've also examined the inter-regional traffic trends. And this is particularly critical because SB 375 mandates us to minimize the growth in the in-commuting. And what you can see here is that the peak for in-commuting or traffic levels entering our region occurred in 2006. And while there was a slight uptick in 2013, it remains well below that peak level experienced last decade. The third finding relates to traffic congestion in transit. We found that both traffic congestion and transit demand are highly concentrated in the central part of the Bay Area. This morning we released the top 10 congested corridors list. As you can see here, the vast majority of those top 10 corridors are located in the East Bay. In addition, the number one most congested corridor turns out to be I-80 leaving San Francisco in the afternoon commute hour. And that reflects the booming job center that is downtown San Francisco. The second most congested corridor, I-880, in the morning commute headed towards Silicon Valley. So we can see how both those two job centers, San Francisco and Silicon Valley, are resulting in increased traffic congestion. Now, when we look at regional traffic congestion in terms of the number of minutes of delay, we can look at it in two ways. The first, which we call extreme or congested delay, reflects the delay in which folks are going less than 35 miles per hour. The average commuter experiences about 2.6 minutes of this delay every weekday. The latest data for total delay comes from 2011, and that delay is anything less than the speed limit, and it's approximately 7 minutes of delay per day. Now that we know there's a connection between congestion and economic growth. So as the economy booms, we tend to see growth in congestion. And what this slide shows is since the year 2000, the trends in terms of population and job growth. And what you can see here is that when the jobs increased in the region prior to the Great Recession and then today, we've seen similar spikes in congested delay. getting back to the idea of congestion is, and its concentration in the Central Bay Area, this pie chart indicates that half of all the congestion in the Bay Area occurs in just two counties, Alameda and Contra Costa County. When we add in Santa Clara County and the South Bay, that reflects almost three-quarters of all regional congestion. Now, we've zoomed into the central part of the region here to show where this, where the transit ridership and other non-automobile commuters are living. And this congestion is also generating a large share of these transit trips. Folks are trying to avoid the heavily congested roadways in the region's core. And when you look at this map, you not only see San Francisco as a leading center for non-automobile commuters, but also locations in the inner East Bay as having similarly high levels of transit commute mode shares and other non-auto mode shares. In addition, corridors in Contra Costa County, such as Lafayette, Orinda, and Walnut Creek, have very high levels of non-automobile commute share, for especially given their lower density nature compared to San Francisco. Now, when we break down the transit ridership data, we can see that, again, there's this concentration in the central part of the region. 45% of all transit trips in the Bay Area occur on just one operator in one city, and that would be Muni. When we add in BART, which is another quarter of all transit trips in the region, that's almost three-quarters of all the ridership in the Bay Area. The fourth finding from the project is related to congestion and reliability. So we know we have higher than average levels of freeway congestion, but we found out in this project that we also have the most reliable freeway travel times. And we've termed we've named this finding that we're really reliably congested. That is, that the travel times are slow, there is congestion, but it's reliable. You know that it's going to be there. So when we look at the top 10 list for the metro areas, you can see here that Los Angeles comes in as number one for the highest level of extreme or congested delay. And we have similar levels to the city of Houston, who ranks number two. But when we look at the buffer time index, which is a measure of reliability, we actually have the best buffer time index of any major metro area. Our freeway travel time reliability is three times better than Washington, D.C., so we are significantly more reliable than the worst performer for this measure. Moving on to state of good repair, we examined both bridges and highways as well as local streets and found that while the bridges and highways condition have measurably improved, local street pavement conditions have stagnated over the same time period. Here, this graph shows the pavement condition index, a measure of the pavement condition for our local roads. And what you can see is over the last 5 years, the pavement condition index has remained stable at 66. But when we look at our state highway system and our bridges, we can see that significant improvements have been achieved. In fact, for our state highway system, it's since records began in the year 2000, we're at the best condition since 2000. So four out of five Bay Area highway lane miles are in good or fair condition. With bridges, we also saw a spike in bridges being identified as structurally deficient in the late 1990s. And this includes both bridges and overpasses. And thanks to investments in order to improve these bridges and structures, we've seen a significant reduction in the share of bridges that are structurally deficient. And as of 2012, we were down to approximately 15% of bridges in that category. Finally, we looked at transit ridership trends. And while total regional transit ridership has increased somewhat, the per capita use of public transit has decreased over time. This graph shows the total boardings on all Bay Area transit operators over the last 20 years. And data for this began to be collected in 1991. So this is as far back as we can go. Total transit ridership between 1991 and 2012 went up by approximately 3% in the region. But our region's population has grown significantly faster. When we look at, you can see this chart shows that the growth in jobs and population compared to total transit boardings. And you can see that the transit boardings marked in blue are lagging the growth in jobs and population. Thus, when we look at the per capita boardings, we found that there was a 14% decline in per capita use of public transit. In other words, the average Bay Area resident got on board a bus or train 79 times in 1991. Today, it's closer to 68 times per year. Now, I've bolded Muni in these graphs partially because they account for half of all the regional transit trips, and so they're a particularly important driver of transit trends, but also because of how they've affected the regional trend. So while part of the reason why per capita usage of public transit has gone down somewhat over this time period can be attributed to suburbanization of jobs and growth in the South Bay, where transit mode share is typically lower than in the rest of the central part of the region, Muni has also contributed to this decline. So you can see that the typical San Francisco resident is taking Muni at a less frequent rate than they did back in 1991. We also examined the percent change in each of the different operators, and this is useful because this reflects what you've probably heard in the media, which is the growth of operators such as Caltrain and BART, which have seen growth faster than the rate of population growth in the region. But at the same time, we've seen declines on some of the other major operators. So Muni is marked there. It experienced a per capita decline in ridership over this time period. But even more importantly, on some of the other bus operators in the region, the declines range from 20 to 40% when adjusted for population. When we compare ourselves against other metro areas, we recognize that we remain a leader for public transit in the United States, but we're not moving ahead as quickly as some of our peers. When we compare, for example, New York since 1991, has seen a rapid growth in its public transit ridership faster than the growth in its population. And even the metro area of Miami, which is not known for particularly high transit usage, has seen a growth faster than population thanks to a higher density land use pattern near its rail stations and a free fare policy in its downtown area that provided more transit options for those residents. Los Angeles, which has also invested significantly in rail, since 1991, they have built about a half dozen different rail lines, and they've seen growth in ridership as well. The only metro areas that performed worse than the Bay Area were Dallas, Houston, and Atlanta. Those areas have seen very significant declines in transit ridership when adjusted for population. So with that, I want to give you a quick preview of the Vital Signs website to give you a sense not only of these findings, but how we're going to communicate them to the public. So the Vital Signs website is designed to take all this data and make it so anyone can customize it and understand what's happening in their neighborhood. So first of all, we built this website with a very simple, streamlined user interface. Folks can just choose the issue that they're interested in, and then select the measure from underneath there. And over the next few months, we'll be adding in measures on land use, economy, and environment following our planning committee meetings. So as you can see, the site is designed with a modern interface. We have built it so it can be read on any device, so anything from a smartphone to a tablet to a desktop computer. And in theory, you could go and analyze transit ridership trends while actually riding public transit. Now, down here, we have a measure grid that allows you to filter the various data so you can explore what data is available on the site. And, of course, all of the data is available in a data center that folks can use to understand and actually go and do additional analyses on their own. And we think that will be particularly beneficial for planners at agencies across the region. So there are really two audiences for the project. There's the public and there's planners. So I want to start off with what we provided, some of the features we provided for the public. And the idea here is that we're taking complex data and we're making it into something that people can use. So in addition to having a traditional narrative that folks can read, we've taken the data and created some simple interactives. So for example, let's say you were interested in understanding what was happening in the city of El Cerrito in terms of its pavement condition. You could simply load El Cerrito into this interactive, and you could see how it compared to the average condition in the county of Contra Costa. This allows every interactive to be personalized for whatever city you live in. But we wanted to go beyond just the city level and actually let people see what was happening in their neighborhood. So, for example, for this pavement condition measure, you can actually go in and explore this map. This is showing the city data. But you can actually zoom in to a specific neighborhood. So we've loaded in all of the streets in every jurisdiction in the entire region, so that way you can see what the pavement condition is on in front of your house or down the block. So if you, let's say you lived here in the Inner Richmond area, you can just simply load up the neighborhood and then pan right over these streets, and over on the left side there you can see what the street pavement condition is. We think this is a pretty powerful interactive, and it's especially beneficial for cities unlike San Francisco that don't have the resources to create this sort of interactive map functionality. So this is across the Bay Area. I want to show another example of this type of interactive with bridges. So, of course, people are always concerned about the safety of the bridges across the region. And so what we've, not only do we have historical trend data, there's, of course, many more interactives than I'm showing this morning. But we have an interactive map of all the bridges in the region, as well as all the overpasses. And the federal government and Caltrans identify these bridges, whether they're structurally deficient or structurally sound. You can easily search a particular area. So, for example, we could just search where we are right now here in Oakland. And the map will zoom in immediately to that neighborhood. And then you can look at what's the condition of those bridges in your neighborhood. You just hover right over them, and you can see whether they are structurally sound or structurally deficient. This is particularly powerful for areas like the North Bay, where you can see with these dots, the size of the dot corresponds to the traffic volumes, and the color represents whether it's deficient or not. You can see all of these small bridges in rural Sonoma County and actually look and see which of them are structurally deficient. Moving on to an example of some of
the Runner Park.
To show some of the data related to congestion, which we just released to the media this morning, we have interactives related to the time spent in congestion, but also an interactive map that lets folks see where the congestion is. So let's say you live down in Silicon Valley and wanted to understand the congestion patterns down there. You can actually look at, you can use this interactive, and I'm panning through the different times of day right here. So we're looking at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. These are the different times of day, and you can read more information by just hovering right over those segments. You can see when that congestion begins and ends and how it compares, where does it stack up in terms of regional congestion. And we let folks do this for anywhere in the region. Here I'm panning through the PM rush hour down in the Silicon Valley area. Just to give a sense of some of the features that might be attractive to some planning staff at local agencies, I'm looking at the commute mode share measure right now. I showed in my presentation this chart, which allows you to see the commute mode share for the Bay Area. But obviously, if you work for Contra Costa Transportation Authority, you might want to have this for your region. So you just click here, Contra Costa, and you automatically get a chart for Contra Costa. And with one more click, you can download that and drop that into whatever presentation or meeting materials you have, you're creating for your committee meeting there in Contra Costa. And finally, I just want to show an example of what you can do with transit ridership data. You know, we often struggle here at MTC to fit all of our transit operators on a slide because we have so many of them. The line graphs tend to get cluttered up. And so with a website, we don't have that problem. So, for example, let's say I work up in Sonoma County and I want to compare the operators that apply there. So I can just select the operators up in Sonoma County, which would be Golden Gate, Sonoma County Transit, and Santa Rosa City Bus. And I've now immediately created a historical trend graph that shows the percent change in ridership for the transit agencies in my jurisdictional area. And so looking at this data, I can now know that Golden Gate's transit ridership has declined relative to population growth over this time period, while Santa Rosa City Bus and Sonoma County Transit have grown significantly. Anyway, this is just a taste of some of the features. There's over 40 of these different interactives, but we're hoping we can get the public and planners engaged and have them check out this website when we launch it in a few weeks. Just to wrap up, our launch date for the website will be January 28th. We plan on returning to the Planning Committee in March with the results from the land use and economy sections of vital signs. And this morning I'm happy to take any questions about the website as well as our findings from Phase 1A.
What I'd like you to touch on is how will this influence our next round on the Bay Plan? You know, it's like we're delivering bad news at real-time bad news, it seems like. But this is a lot of information. It's very interesting. But somebody needs to talk about the application. How are we going to use this information? How does it help us make our decisions?
One of the interesting things we've found, is, especially as we add in the land use and economy components to the transportation, is it helps us understand perhaps some of the areas where we've fallen short in the past and how we can make sure that we don't make those mistakes again. Some of these declines that we've seen in transit ridership in the region are the result of the suburbanization of jobs, and that results in it's very difficult to serve those jobs with public transit. So as we look forward and we look to enhance our land use pattern in Plan Bay Area, we recognize the need for increased focused growth in order to make sure that we have those denser job centers that can be well served by transits. Obviously, these regional trends are in the past, and we want to try to make sure that we move forward with a vision that gets us towards a better performance outcome. But I think Plan Bay Area already is pointing us towards a better goal. We're simply, this data should really help us just refine that vision.
And when this shows me 77% is driving a car, I mean, what accommodations are we making for those people? Are we just saying that we just want to change that trend, or we're going to try and help facilitate that commute?
Well, Mr. Chairman, as you know, one of the big challenges we have as a region is that we have aging pains and growing pains occurring at the same time. And the aging pains are taking most of our money. They're close to 90% of our budget. So when you have that kind of imbalance, you really got no margin for error in how you spend that 10%. And I think, as Dave indicated, what we're trying to do with performance throughout our agency and throughout our thinking across all the activities we do here is to instill it at every level. So you have been using performance measures in your plan for, I think, a couple, three cycles now, pretty systematically, to evaluate projects. What projects should we include? And what that analysis is tending to show is that the traditional big, heavy capital investment is not necessarily the best place to spend your money. In many cases, there are just things we can't afford anymore. But what that performance discipline, I think, is highlighting is the extent to which we need to focus more on operational improvements. And that's especially true on the highway system. What we have in the network, as you see here, is a very peak-oriented problem. We don't have congestion all day long anywhere. What we have is congestion at peak hours. That's fairly typical of most metropolitan areas around the world. But what one strategy that we could employ to deal with that in a considerable way is if folks had different work hours. And we've got an economy now that will tolerate that in a lot of different places of the economy, not all of them, but in a lot of them. And we think one thing that points out is a better relationship with the private sector and the business community in trying to pursue those strategies, because that will reduce that amount of delay considerably. We've got peak pricing on the Bay Bridge. And if we had peak pricing in more places, and Andy's working on that with express lanes, we think that's another strategy to reduce delay on the highway system. So I think this performance orientation is going to be extremely helpful in the work we do to deal with highway travel, because it's the best way to discriminate between a good investment and a bad one. And it's also a way of proving to yourself whether you did something right or not. We had the 92-880 interchange in the last top 10 list was number 9. Now you can't find it because we fixed it. We built an interchange improvement. So another thing that this data does is it lets you determine whether your investments are really paying off or not. And I think we've got to have the courage to do it so that we can see that sometimes they don't, and we try to not make that mistake again.
Okay. Scott, and I'll just come right around.
Thank you, Mr.
Wrong Scott. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Wiener from San Francisco. First of all, this is great, and I really, really look forward to it going live so we can push it out to our constituents. I think it's just incredibly helpful on a number of levels, and I assume that that entire slideshow is part of the website. And I think it's what it really shows is I think what a lot of us, I think, intuitively have known, that the Bay Area is growing and our investment in transit capacity in particular has not kept up. And the fact that BART hit 400,000 daily ridership, 15 years before they thawed, and that Caltrain has increased by 50%, and that Muni is, you know, it's just, as Supervisor Campos will attest, you sometimes can't even get on to the vehicle. So it's not surprising that as we've had this strong population growth, almost 100,000 in San Francisco in the last decade, and I'm sure similar elsewhere, that people sometimes can't even make a choice to use transit because there simply isn't enough capacity. So this is really important in really quantifying that in a meaningful way. And hopefully, yes, having accountability and saying what investments are working and what aren't working, but just showing the huge need to move the dial in terms of transit capacity. And I hope that that will spur efforts regionally, locally, statewide, and I won't say federal because that's sort of the it's not happening in the near future, but at least in Sacramento on down, to significantly increase our investment in transit capacity.
I'll just come right around. Dave?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure how significant it is yet, but it seems like at some point, even though I know this ongoing report is focused primarily on true public transportation, to start trying to show, track, or sort of disclose what's going on with the non-public carriers that are out there, basically. I mean, we've done a lot of work here sort of indirectly, keeping abreast of what's going on with Google and Apple and everybody else. I don't, you know, you hear all kinds of numbers in terms of where Google alone would fit in terms of ranking in terms of the 28 transit operators, but it seems like it's at least in the upper tier, and they're not letting up. They're growing. I know just advised recently that in the area around Google Mountain View, they're now providing free shuttles, not just for their employees, but for the general public. So, again, how much is that affecting these much larger numbers in the Bay Area? Maybe not much yet. Maybe not much at all. But whether it's affecting our numbers a lot or a little, I think is part of what you're trying to do here, is to let people know how much impact that really has. You know, it's something people outside of these rooms, outside of this room, in the general public, are starting to make their own impressions about. And, you know, to the extent you can put facts and statistics out there to let them know how much impact that really has, I think it would be good. The other thing I have, which is just kind of an open question, is how much you're looking at, or we're looking at, demographic changes, you know, over time as impacting the skewing the numbers. When you talk about, you know, ridership changing as a percentage of population or on a per capita basis, in the fact that our population, in our senior population, is going to double over the next 15 years, I don't, you know, obviously we're going to have immigration and births and everything else. I don't know how that affects things, because I think at some level we're talking different modalities again. We're talking about people who aren't even commuting anymore, for example. So to the extent that obviously somewhere that's all embedded here, because you've got the complete picture here, but maybe in the future, thinking about how to call out changes in demographics, you know, in terms of another line on the chart, if you will. That's it. That's my comments. Thank you.
Commissioner, if I could just note, on the first one, we agree with you, and to the extent we can pry the data out of them, we do want to get Google and the rest of those guys into the game. The last time I looked, if you add all of the private shuttles together, they're maybe the seventh or eighth largest transit operation in the Bay Area. So it's not nothing, but it's not Muni either by a long stretch. On the second point, I do think you're making a very good one, and we are sort of maybe at a threshold or watershed moment, really, when you look at a lot of the demographic and demand factors affecting especially transit ridership. You know, what happened over the 70s, 80s, 90s is, you know, women moved into the workforce. Well, that's not going to happen again. They're here. and that trend all by itself affected dramatic differences in how we got around. And the fact is a lot of those women were driving. Because they were doing the, you know, they were dropping off kids and dropping off the, this and that and the other thing. The point is, going forward, as you say, we have growth in demographic groups that are probably going to favor transit more than not. And so, I, as the chairman said, we're sort of showing you real-time grim information right now. We do see the picture getting rosier. But I think the history also shows you that there are some forces out there that can really overwhelm what we try to do in the infrastructure supply business. And the more we get into affecting those demand levers, whether it's with pricing or land use strategies, or whether the demographic trends are just going to favor us, those really do determine the difference in the long run.
Amy?
Thank you. You know, picking up on the – thank you, Mr. Chair. Picking up on the Chair's comments about sort of real-time information, one of the things that strikes me in looking at this data and the importance of the tool is this very nature of the fact that we're doing everything we can to maximize the network we have, whether it's – you know, last night we heard from our BART president, Joel Keller, at the Contra Costa Mayors talking about, you know, BART's issues with – increasing, you know, the new rail cars, the real-time, you know, the trip positive train control, increasing capacity. The same thing today, earlier this morning, we talked about the capacity of the highway system using intelligent design, smart corridors to maximize the capacity. But at some point, we realized that we really do need to look at some of the issues around work hours. And if the workforce is changing in terms of their flexibility, but also looking at employers, anybody who has experienced those heavy commute corridors, and I had the opportunity the other day to go the opposite direction and saw that bumper-to-bumper traffic all the way from Martinez down to Santa Clara, and it's just staggering. And you realize that that's all driven because of our, you know, the structure around work hours. So I think this will be an important tool for employers also to look at their, you know, operations and how to provide flexibility for their employees so that, that less time is spent in a car or on a train and more either at home or working. So I think the data, you know, picture tells a thousand words. So this is a very exciting project. I think, too, the other thing about it is the interactive nature of the maps, the fact that the public can look at this and see see the areas that they're interested in. So thank you. I think it's going to be an exciting. I also think that the idea of rolling this out in stages is going to be helpful because people can, beginning with transportation and looking at the other aspects of our Bay Area plan, will be really helpful as people work with this as a tool. So it's great. Thank you.
Julie?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that on? Doesn't sound like it to me. Okay. That's all right. I can holler. Okay. Yeah, very interesting presentation. And going through the packet last night, I found it very interesting, but the additional comments help a lot. Just reading the slides are not quite as informative as hearing the background and the infill. So I'm wondering if with the website, when it goes live, will there be a audio narrative that goes with it for the slideshow? I think that might be helpful for people as they start to understand what this website can do so that they know where to look.
That's a great point. We actually are creating a series of short videos on a couple different of these key issue areas, and those are going to be posted to our site when we launch the
awesome. Yeah. Awesome. I was particularly intrigued as we looked at the data and went through the slides, and you verified it later, but slide 36, which talks about how many people stay within their county and how many people leave the county to go to work, Contra Costa has been one of those massive exporters of workers for years and years and years. And it used to be, at least in our data that we had probably 10 years ago, about 60% of our workers left. Now, about 60% of our workers are staying within the county. And I think that reflects, as you verified, the suburban job centers. But that doesn't mean that they're staying close to home necessarily. They may still have a 30-mile commute. It's just all within the county instead of going across county lines. And so the being able to look at where the congestion is on those corridors and the timing of that and maybe even some origin destination information, I don't know if that's part of the plan here at some point or how live that is. But as Amy mentioned, that really would help us working with our employers to figure out whether perhaps employer subsidies for direct transit routes from one place to another or indeed independent, privately funded, their own shuttles, similar to what Google is doing, would be worthwhile for them to do. But it also reinforces what we're trying to do, I think, with the express lanes that we're putting in, particularly in my county, on Route 680, and how helpful that will be for those who are still going to have to use cars because we can't get enough transit down the 680 corridor between some of those huge job centers and, say, the Walnut Creek BART station or the Dublin BART station. So this will be really helpful. The other question I had is, how responsive is this data? Is it really real-time? Or is it based on studies from a year ago, or how responsive is this to real time?
It varies based on the data set. So we, for this project, we're generally searching for available public data that simply is just not easy to view for the public. It's in obscure formats or it's too complicated, right? Oftentimes, there is a year or two data lag for different data sets.
Are we going to note that on the bottom of each of these slides to say based on data from?
Yeah. So all of the sources are included in the site, but the years that are available. And typically that data lag is just simply due to the fact that data needs to be collected, cleaned, analyzed. Whoever's collecting it, like the Census Bureau, needs to go through a process.
Right. But those congestion corridors by hour are not today. They're a year or two old. So if somebody's looking at what can I expect today now that the recession isn't really in its depth, they're not likely to find exact information. And I think that was the point we made in the press conference today as well, mm-hmm. that we're not, the last 6 months or so are not reflected in these maps.
That's right.
Okay. I think we need to make that really clear so people understand. I mean, for some of us, the traffic a year ago was so dramatically different in our commute route than it is today that it literally can add 45 minutes to an hour to our commute just because of the changes in that time span. So I think we need to make that sort of disclaimer on here so people have realistic expectations. I mean, I think this is fantastic. This is so much better than what we've ever had, but I think we need to be cautious there. Thanks.
Well, not only the disclaimer, but we should give them a reference where they can go to get the real time because there are sites available.
Right.
It's 511.org. Right.
Yes. No.
That's where you go.
No, I know. I'm just saying put it on there, Steve.
Put it on there that this is where the real time stuff is.
Well,
if we were really up to snuff, we would figure out a way for the 511 data and this data to sort of blend together and bring it up real time. So this is a start. It's not the finished product, and we've got some bright young people involved, so it's going to get a lot better.
Yeah. Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to compliment the staff on this. This is, in my opinion, one of the most informative reports I've seen as a commissioner. So I want to thank you for the work, and it's kind of helped me understand other transit agencies throughout the region that maybe I didn't quite understand before. Riderships, they're increasing ridership, things like that. So I certainly want to applaud you for that. Coming from Alameda County, where I think 6 of the 10 most congested areas are in Alameda County, and yet a lot of people are just kind of traveling right through us and not really have an origin nor a destination, which is somewhat hard for, kind of hurts. It seems to me that, and I'm trying to formulate this, Steve, so I mean, it makes sense in my mind, but let me just state parochial to my area where I live. I live in the Tri-Valley, where if you overturn a beer truck, it's going to take you 5 hours to get to work. It's a relatively congested area, but a lot of that congestion comes from the San Joaquin County and Stanislaus County and, parts beyond. And it seems like when we're doing data sets like this, and I'm, again, being parochial because I'm sure Santa Clara could make the comment, Contra Costa could make it, Solano could all make the comment that people are commuting through them or into them. It seems like we're kind of missing the boat when we're not tracking the people that are moving from these other outside communities. I heard a little bit touch of interregional traffic, but we're not really drilling down, and we're not really drilling down even what those communities are doing transit-wise. For example, the ACE train, and the increases or decreases ACE train's seeing, adding trains, things like that. So is there a way, do you think, or do you think it would be helpful? I mean, for me, I know it would be, but do you think it would be helpful as a whole to this project that we could better track the people that are coming into our MPO?
Yes, and in part we do. I mean, folks who are from outside the region, we pick them up on the highway. We pick them up if they're on a transit vehicle. So, I mean, we're counting them. But I think you're absolutely right that our understanding of our own region is quite a bit better than of the adjoining regions. And the folks out there traveling don't pay attention to those boundaries. So we actually have some work underway that Ken and Dave Ory have started with some of our adjacent MPO partners. And we're going to start out in the Central Valley because that is the biggest pair we've got. And so I think you will see in the next plan, Bay Area, a much better attempt to try to take that into account. And we hope to branch out from there to reach down below Silicon Valley and out to the Sacramento Valley as well. Because we're legally still a 9-county region, but as far as commute shed, we've busted that boundary some time ago.
Right. Thank you. I think that's excellent. And one of the things I also want to add is where some of this information may be grim, I think that, as a member of the Metropolitan Transportation Commission and my colleagues, I also think that there's areas that we can look to say, well, we've done the right thing, we've made the right investment, and we should be proud of the work that we've done here, because I think we continue to look at where we can get the biggest bang for our buck, and I think this data will help us to even continue that, but also make it even better.
I think the most notable example for me is the bridge and highway repair statistics. They've gotten better because we've spent a ton of money on them. And as Commissioner Weiner said, when you invest, you can get results. You obviously don't want to invest willy-nilly, but when you can put some money into pavement and bridge structures, you get results.
I would only say we need to drive 580 from the San Joaquin line into Livermore, and we could probably see where our next area of focus and our PCI could probably go way up if we just paved that road.
Okay, Jake.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jake McKenzie, Sonoma County with the lousy bridges and the nine cities of Sonoma County with the good bridges. Anecdotally, I'm here to tell you that I was pretty amazed by the freeway reliability metro comparison, Bay Area number one. I'm here to testify that my journey from Rohnert Park to this building, I established the slow land speed record last month of 2 hours and 25 minutes, whereas this morning I kept up with my all-time record. My all-time record's 55 minutes. I got here in an hour and 5 minutes this morning. I call this the Friday morning effect. And then, of course, you do have, as Commissioner Haggerty said, the beer truck impact. But seriously, I do not believe that on some of the segments, and I think I've heard that from my colleague Commissioner Pierce. To me, under real time in this calendar year or this last 12 months, some pretty significant changes starting to take place with the improvement in the economy. The other thing I would just note is that in Solano, Napa, Sonoma, and Marin County, the changing traffic patterns on Highway 37 into Highway 101 and the clear change in commute patterns that's taking place. And again, it's this getting the real-time data, and I think our executive director's suggestion of the blending of 511 data into this scheme bears an awful lot, it deserves a lot of attention and a lot of thought. So, in fact, if we're sending people to this very elegant program and they're seeing these travel times, for example, which they know from anecdotally and their own experience is not reality, you start to lose faith in these data sets. So I would just conclude by saying that we have, since our commission workshop last March, established working activities under the aegis of the trying to replicate Columbus Day traffic levels on our highway system. And we in the operations committee, working with Andy Vermeer and staff, working with Don Mackin, the deputy Caltrans District 4 director, are going to be coming back in front of the operations committee. We are going to come back in front of this commission with ideas to start to hopefully put into effect through agreements with Caltrans and the Highway Patrol mechanisms, looking at express lanes, looking at different mechanisms to take advantage of more up-to-date intelligent management of traffic. And I really think that this is going to be the way that we're going to have to go. We're not going to be widening the freeways. We don't have the money, nor I think should we have the desire to do that, but we should follow up with companies on flex time work hours and take advantage of all of these technologies. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Tom?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So I agree with Jake's last comments. I think it's important for us to think about, you know, how we can change things. But let me just say, first of all, I want to thank the staff for this report. I think it was really excellent, and it's really mind-boggling what information we can put together and how we can look at it. And I think it enhances our ability to make, you know, good decisions, or at least those decisions that have some basis of rationale to it. I also think that what was the most eye-opening for me was the issue of the fact that the timed of the employers and the relationship to the employers to the traffic, which makes a lot of sense, but you know, to see it firsthand makes really brings it home. So what I wonder is how we can try to figure out some kind of a campaign to better utilize our existing resources, our existing freeway system, our existing transportation network that we already have out there. And that would seem to me that relies a little bit on what Jake was just talking about, is trying to figure out a campaign to actually get employers to start thinking about how they can start scheduling their employees at off-peak times. And as an example, this our group right here, he's listening to Jake. It takes him all this time. Well, then why do we meet at 9:30? I mean, why don't we meet at 10:30? If we met at 10:30, they wouldn't have any of these problems potentially getting here, and we'd instead of ending at 12, we'd end at 1. And we'd be able to, you know, alleviate and set an example in that regard. And I'm trying to think about if there's any way we can get the state to think about ways to incentivize employers to be able to reschedule their employees for off-peak times to arrive and leave their work. We do give these commuter benefits. Well, maybe a commuter benefit ought to be some way or other designed in a way to say to employers that if you figure out how to have people come in instead of at 9 o'clock in the morning or 8:30 in the morning, you come in at 11 and you leave at 7 or something like that. It's not that much difference. I mean, we sort of live in a 24-hour news cycle. There's no reason why people can't adjust their lives to fit into a schedule that makes more sense for our transportation. And it's really just a question of how we move them in that direction. And obviously, with incentives like pricing, congestion pricing, pricing on the fast lane, so that you make it more difficult during peak hours to be able to use the commute lanes, things like that. And then I'm a strong believer that we've got to figure out ways to get more people in private vehicles. So I think that trend is happening, and I'm happy to see it happen. And what concerns me, and I think it concerned this commission, is that the trends, are, as far as I can determine, are more and more intercities are going to be not affordable for working families and lower-income people. So the workforce that we need, the maids, the people who work in the restaurants, the people who do the day-to-day work, is going to be pushed further and further to the outside of the Bay Area, because they're not going to be able to live and afford to live in the inner city. So the question is, how are they going to commute? How are they going to get here? And how are they going to work? And what are we thinking about that? And then lastly, I want to just mention that with all those other concerns, there's also the question of how can we have BART carry more passengers? Because right now they're at a huge number. I ride BART all the time, and I ride it, unfortunately, a lot of times during the commute hours. And when I get on in Berkeley downtown or in Ashby, I never have a chance to sit down. It's not even an option. Sometimes I try to go back to El Cerrito or something, and even then it's difficult to get a place to even sit down by going backwards in order to get a seat, in order to go forward comfortably. So the issue then is, I know this is a third rail, but I think we got to start thinking about how we get another tube or another way for BART to be able to access San Francisco. At one point we had the Southern Crossing. I don't think we want another bridge, but I think we do need to figure out a way to get another tube or something into San Francisco so we stop that choke point and allow that system to provide much more reliable and faster service.
Thank you, Tom. David?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and I do want to associate myself with all the remarks that are complimenting staff. I thought it was an excellent presentation and one of the most informative things I've seen, not just here at the MTC, but different agencies that I've served on. A couple of questions. One is, and maybe you touched on this before I got here, but in terms of taking this show on the road, if you will, and making sure that the different people that can benefit from it are actually know that it's there, I'm wondering if you have any thoughts around that. I think that a lot of the workers, a lot of the people that could benefit the most from something like this may be the ones who are, the least likely to know about it. So that's just one question, and wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
We were working really hard to come up with our outreach plan for when we launch the site in a couple weeks. Right now we're planning on a series of press releases. We're going to have social media. As you saw in my demo, we've made sure that the site is available in a large number of languages, so we're hoping that that will allow attract a diversity in terms of the viewership on the site. We, in terms of actually taking the show on the road, we've primarily been doing that before releasing it. We've been trying to talk to working groups and get this, all the stakeholders from the various counties and cities in the room, and get the word out through those venues.
Well, I think that in a lot of parts of the Bay Area, I know in San Francisco, community-based organizations are one way of getting the word out to a lot of people you want to, you know, have hear on things. So so that's one possibility. And I think that, you know, to the extent that you're also accessing ethnic media, I think that could be very useful. One question that I have is... and maybe this is a dumb question, but in terms of some of the trends that have that we've seen in places like San Francisco, we've seen a lot of displacement and a lot of pushing out of residents to outer parts of the Bay Area. Is there any way of knowing how that displacement has, you know, impacted traffic congestion? Is that even a possibility?
That's a tough question to answer. Not only is it difficult to actually track displacement, but trying to make that correlation with traffic is tough. I think we'll have some more answers, a little bit more clarity on that when we come back to you on with the land use and the economic data. We're already starting to look at that, and there's some very interesting things that have happened in San Francisco over the last half century.
The other thing, and just a final point, and I don't know if it's a point or a question, but it's in terms of... changing commuter times and work times, a lot of the workers that are impacted by the congestion now may be unable to really have any say on that, you know. And I think that to the extent that we're only approaching or talking about approaching companies and the private sector, that we may need to expand that conversation, because the people that could benefit from some of those changes may not have much of a say on that.
Okay, I have two speaker cards. Ken Burkowski, Ken, you want to comment on this item?
Yeah, just a couple of quick comments. I've seen this twice. I think it's fascinating. What I would really like to ask you, please improve the contrast of the colors. It's very difficult to read the screen. It's not senior-friendly. So please, because this is very valuable stuff. You know, you almost need an EIR to evaluate the impact of this. People see this, they may start making different decisions. And then you're going to come to a meeting and someone's going to have a whole different idea, so... I don't know how to evaluate that. And then this should be also a traffic model. Why can't you do traffic modeling with this? How about putting an express bus lane on the Bay Bridge and see how that would impact the traffic? If you need to improve the Transbay crossing, if you're going to sit in a bus in traffic, then you're not going to want to take the bus. So I think that should be considered. Thank you.
Okay, and Clarence Fisher, I believe. Clarence?
Morning. For the record, my name is Clarence Fisher. I think this is one of the best presentations and data that's going to be available for the public and other agencies ever since you folks were at the Claremont Hotel. I commend the staff for putting this together, and may they hopefully over the next years have more creative innovations like this for the public and staff to use this report. One thing I would like to add for a potential data source in the future, as you look at public transit data ridership statistics, to potentially also include for each operator number of route miles and routes per year. And the reason why I say this is twofold. For example, AC Transit, unfortunately, over the past, you know, years have had to cut back on service, especially in, let's say, their Transbay corridor. And yet now BART is, you know, crying, we're overloaded. AC Transit, can you help us in a partnership to add more Transbay routes back? And also, like, for example, WestCat over the past few years, where they never, a long time ago, did Transbay service, they are also doing help to, you know, with BART to move people onto the Linux shuttle to get them into San Francisco. So if you could somehow include on the transit operators route miles and number of routes, that would show trends, I would think, of why you have increases or decreases in ridership, too. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Jane Kramer. Jane?
Jane Kramer. A concern, but kind of a positive concern that I heard around the table. How do you reduce congestion time? And one suggestion, and I've heard it several times, is change or stagger the hours of work hours of people. The concern I have is that you don't then dominate the way people want to organize their lives in their communities by congestion time demands. So I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying beware of the fact that in a positive sense, you need to make this program available to the community so that they can say, well, this is the way I want to run my life. And it's just not dominated or decided by a transportation agency's need or way of looking at controlling congestion on the highway. It's just not one facet. And so what I'm saying is create that dialogue.
Okay, thank you. All right, that was the last speaker's card. You know, I want to join my colleagues in complimenting staff. David, great presentation. And Steve, bringing forth this performance monitoring initiative, I think is a direction that we need to go. You know, this is a format that we're going to be communicating with this next generation that's really going to be making the decisions to help us solve this problem. And so I think it's a great format, and the information that we're getting is going to help us solve many of the problems. And you've heard some of the suggestions here today that's coming from this data that you're gathering. And so it's really exciting to see how this is being developed, and certainly very encouraging. And I think it's a format that's going to help us with the solution of many of these problems. The one thing, Steve, that I did want to comment on is, you know, the success we've had at BART, we've turned it into a miserable ride. And I like Tom. I mean, I've been riding BART quite a bit, and we're actually leaving some people at some of the stations. People just crammed in, and I've had to stand from El Cerrito del Norte a couple times, and I'm telling you, you stand from there all the way to Civic Center, it's a terrible ride. And so we're going to have to start anticipating, if we're having success, how do we deal with that, and how do we make it a more enjoyable experience taking public transit? I think that you'll reach a point, if we don't deal with that issue, you may end up turning a lot of people off. And so, you know, it's kind of a question to you, you know, as we develop these programs and these strategies to get more people into riding transit, the capacity is just not there.
It's a fair point. And on the BART example, I think we've had a couple of different conversations, and I think probably we need to get BART in here and really walk you through the paces, because there are plans. Some of them are funded, some of them aren't. The thing they've got going right now is to get new cars for their fleet, as you know, and those cars are going to have more capacity.
But it's standing capacity.
Well, some of that will be standing, but Commissioner, when you look around the world, not everybody gets a seat on every transit system. BART has always been this odd hybrid that is both an urban rail system and a commuter railroad. And on a commuter railroad, everyone expects a seat, and that's sort of the typical standard. On an urban transit system, you don't necessarily expect a seat. And so in that sense, I think the Bay Area is sort of catching up to what the rest of the world has been dealing with for some time. Nonetheless, they do need more capacity. That's not something we ought to argue about. And in addition to the cars, what they need is a new train control system, which will let them run more trains through the Transbay 2. That is not yet funded, but we think is a very good project that we've teed up for funding from both Washington and Sacramento. The third step is to look at the question of a tube, because that's where the vast majority of their trips go through every day. And we have $1 million grant from Uncle Sam to evaluate that, and we will be evaluating it. It will cost an arm and a leg and another arm and another leg. But that eventually is where we have to look. But I think in the meantime, the car buy is underway, the train control system is under design, and that's really where we're going to get the benefit in the near term.
Yeah. It just would be nice to start a train maybe in Berkeley or Oakland where somebody gets to sit down one time in their 20-year career going into the city. And so, but the point I'm trying to make is that as we're having the success in transit, we have to make sure that we meet that capacity and it's not a miserable experience. And so, okay, with that, we certainly, again, David, thank you. Just a great presentation. I have one public speaker card. Ken, you want to comment? Yeah.
One comment. So now I became a notary public. So now if you need something notarized, I'm right here. Thank you.
Okay, that's an ad. With that, if there's no further business, the Planning Committee is adjourned.